Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Scott Hunter, and I'm here today to talk about ASP.NET and Visual Studio beyond Visual Studio 2012. So we haven't even shipped .NET 4.5 or Visual Studio 2012 yet, but the team is always looking at the next version, before we even finish shipping the current version. So what I thought we would do today is I'm going to come out and recap what we've done in the current version, .NET 4.5 and Visual Studio 2012, and then I'll show how you can actually tell us what feedback you want for features in the next versions. And then I'll show you some of the stuff that we kind of have on our roadmap that we're playing with and building prototypes of. And I've got Damien Edwards, Dan Roth, Eric Porter, Howard Durking, and Mads Christensen here with me as well. And they're all going to come on and do a demo of some aspect of something we've been prototyping for the next version of ASP.NET and Visual Studio. So to start off, I want to kind of recap where we are with .NET 4.5. So we did a lot of work in the core runtime and in the variety of frameworks, web forms, web pages, MVC, web API that live on top of that framework. To start off, one of the things we did across all of our projects is you'll see that all of our scripts and libraries are now included as NuGet packages. So if you've never used NuGet, NuGet is what we call a package manager. It's a mechanism that allows you to go out to a website or go out to a dialog box in Visual Studio and search for components that you might want to use to build your application. One of the cool aspects of this is it also can have these components can be versioned. So for example, in the past, if you installed Visual Studio 2010 and you create a new project, you've got an old version of jQuery, an old version of jQuery UI, and there's no mechanisms in the template to actually help you upgrade. Because we're now using NuGet everywhere, we can actually provide you with the latest versions of jQuery, jQuery UI, all the libraries that we include. We also include a bunch of features as NuGet packages themselves. For example, we have things like web optimization that we'll talk about a little bit later on that can be upgraded as well. So it's like now these templates, even though we ship them with Visual Studio, they're upgradable on the fly. Another core feature that we built is that I'm super proud about is web optimization. So imagine you're building a website, and we had a great example of this ourselves. We have the ASP.NET website, www.asp.net, and we were looking at this website about a year ago, and the performance on the pages was not great. It was like 3 or 4 or 5 seconds to actually load a page on the site, and we're like, why is this? So we go look at the actual page, and we find out that we're making 40 or 50 requests every single time you request a page. So that means that you request a page, and we go out and oh, there's 7 CSS files, so we'll request all of those. Oh, we have 15 JavaScript libraries, we'll go grab all of those. And each of those requests takes more time. And so as we were working on the next version of .NET, we thought, hey, what if we take optimization of that kind of scenario and build it directly in the product? And so we have this new feature called optimization that will take all your CSS and JavaScript files, combine them into one file, and bring them down as a single request. Also compressing and minifying them as well, so they're smaller. So we built that in the framework. If you've been watching the conference already, Damien, Levi, and Brad from our team showed the async support that we have in .NET 4.5, and they showed how to use it in ASP.NET. So async is something that we did in .NET 4.5. I'm not going to go into that because just go out and find the async session by those guys, and you can read all about that or hear all about that. The next thing we did is Razor. Razor is something we shipped as part of MVC 3 and Web Pages 1. Super popular. And we did some enhancements to Razor as well. So common enhancements to Razor is you used to actually have to use a helper to qualify a URL. So if you wanted to like find an image somewhere in a folder in your site, you would have to use a helper to actually have it figure out the entire path for that. If you're used to web forms, you're probably used to using tilde slash, which we automatically base to the root of the site. Now you can use tilde slash everywhere in Razor. We have a couple more features that we've done there as well, but I don't have time to go into those. The next thing is, you hear a lot about Azure today, especially with the new websites that we just released about a month ago. We have Scott Guthrie coming on after us to talk about that stuff. We want to make sure that all the ASP.NET project templates work great with Azure out of the box. So we have these new universal providers, which replace our membership system that used to be keyed only to SQL Server to be based on NDD Framework. Because they're based on NDD Framework, we can now swap the database in. So we can use SQL Azure, SQL Compact. You could even use something like MySQL if you wanted to. Anything that has an EF provider, we support. For web forms, we added some more granularity on request validation, so you could turn it on or off on a control-by-control basis. If you've been using MVC or web forms with dynamic data, we actually added some new data annotations. These are attributes that you can place on your data classes, and we'll do validation for those. We added a whole bunch of new ones for things like credit cards that you can now use. Something else that's really cool is we added support for HTML5 WebSockets. And this is a great way to do real-time data on a website. And I think Damien might have a talk on SignalR. We're going to talk a little bit about this later in the conference. WebSockets are cool. They basically allow you to have a connection open to the server that stays open. Instead of doing a polling mechanism where to go find out if something's refreshed, you make a request every 5 seconds. Now you can just keep that pipe open the entire time, and when the data comes through, you can show it. We have a bunch of miscellaneous features as well that I don't call out on the slide, but one of the things you'll notice in 4.5 is our memory footprint by default is about 35% smaller than it was in .NET 4. So we've dramatically decreased the amount of RAM that ASP.NET takes when it's actually running. We also dramatically decrease the amount of startup time it takes to get us launched for the first time. So that means the first request to your website will happen much faster, will load the runtime much faster. The next area that we worked on in .NET 4.5 was web forms. So when I talk about web forms, I also want to always caveat it and say, people always ask us, what's the future of web forms? They see all of our out-of-band projects like MVC, web pages, web API that rev at a much faster rate than web forms. I always want to clarify, web forms is still a core component of ASP.NET. Because it's in the core framework, we only get a chance to rev it every 2 or 3 years. And so this is one of those chances. And what we did this time is we did a combination of things. We added HTML5 support all throughout web forms. By that, what I mean is things like your text box control now supports all the HTML5 data types. We took the file upload control. It now supports multiple file uploads. So we've done, I actually think that in the previous framework, some of those things were actually illegal. You couldn't even use some of those attributes. The next thing is, as I was mentioning, since we're in the core framework, we can't ship as often. But one of the things that we wanted to do, now that we have a chance to ship, was take a lot of the features that we've actually given our MVC customers and move them back to web forms. So a couple of things on the screen here are unobtrusive JavaScript validation. What this is in the past, ASP.NET's written all of this bulky JavaScript that is stuck at the bottom of your page when you use our validation controls. When we introduced MVC, I think it was 2, we added unobtrusive validation. And what unobtrusive validation is instead of putting all that blocky JavaScript in your markup, what we do is put attributes on your actual input types. And those attributes basically tell the validation library how to validate things. So what you get is you get a much smaller page payload. And we're bringing that feature from MVC 2 and 3 back into web forms. The next thing is model binders. So MVC has this notion of what we call model binders. If you've been using web forms for a long time, you might be used to this notion of we have these data source controls. I've never been a huge fan of data source controls because I'm a database guy that wants to get down and dirty and write my database code by myself. Web forms tries to do a lot of this for you automatically, this data source control kind of writes your SQL for you, or using Unity framework does all the work for you. But a lot of times you want to write your own business logic somewhere, and that's kind of hard to do in web forms today. What you would do is use one of our data source controls that requires you to write a lot of code to do this. Well, MVC had this nice feature called model binders where you basically just write methods in your action methods. You could just write the data logic. It would basically take your elements on the page, map them to an object, give you the object, and then you can go stick the object in your data layer however you want. So we've brought that into web forms as well. And it's awesome. Write your own data code for you. Visual Studio actually goes a step further, and it'll detect when you're doing model binding and actually write the skeleton of the methods for you, so it kind of gets you started out. Along the same line of that, as we're doing model binding, how about strongly typed data controls? This is, in the past, if you write the expressions in ASP.NET to do data binding, you have to just write a string. And there's no way at compile time we can do IntelliSense for that string. It's just a raw string. With strongly typed data controls, since you're telling us your data type, not only do you not have to write that string anymore, but when you start typing the text, we can actually give you IntelliSense on your data model. I mentioned before we added features to request validation so you can actually turn it on and off on a control-by-control basis. And then the final thing that we've done, and you're going to see this across all of our technologies, is we've added support for OAuth to our project templates. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you go to a lot of websites today, including Jabber, the chat site we're using for this conference, when it asks you to log in, it gives you the choice of logging in with Facebook or Twitter or Google, whatever account you want. We've taken that same functionality and baked it into all of our templates inside of vNext. So you don't have to figure out how to write that code. That's all built into our templates now. I'll talk about Web Pages 2 next. What we've done in Web Pages 2 is that same OAuth feature I was talking about. It's gone through everything, so it's in Web Pages 2. Razor, I mentioned this already. We've got the tilde slash works everywhere, and we have a new feature called conditional attributes that makes some scenarios much smaller to write. Something I'm excited to talk about is we actually added support for mobile CSHTML files to Razor. So as we were looking at vNext, we see, you know, almost everybody's got a smartphone today, and a lot of websites now target not only desktop sites but mobile sites. So we started thinking, how can we build that functionality into our framework? And so what we did is we have the ability, when you create a CSHTML file, you can now create a mobile.cshtml file as well. And what will happen is when a user hits a mobile device, we'll choose the mobile version over the main CSHTML file. This is all extensible, so you could actually say, I want an iPhone to go to mypage.iphone.cshtml. You just have to give us the rule of how to detect it's an iPhone, and we'll do that for you automatically. And we put this into Web Pages. This feature rolls up into MVC as well, and I'll talk about that in a second. We also added some new helpers to Web Pages. Web Pages 1 required you to pretty much write all the code and form logic yourself. We wanted to take some of the validation that we have in Web Forms and MVC and make it available in Web Pages, and we've done that. And we have great helpers now for actually showing Bing Maps or Google Maps on your page as well. Next is MVC 4. Same OAuth templates I talked about before are available in MVC 4. We've also added mobile support to MVC. And by that, what I mean is that same CSHTML feature I was talking about before flows all the way into MVC 4. We also have a mobile template. So if you just want to build a website targeting mobile devices only, we've got a great template for that, but we also have this great NuGet package that you can actually add to your existing MVC applications today. And what this does is it will automatically go and install the jQuery mobile into your application, and it will put a new layout page into your application with a .mobile extension. And this allows you to have that traditional site where on a desktop browser you see the desktop site, on a mobile browser you see the mobile site, and we even give you a switcher to let you move back and forth. So if you've ever been to a site like m.espn.com, when you go to that site on your mobile device, there's a button at the bottom that says, go back to my desktop site. We give you that as well. You can move back and forth. Entity framework code first with migrations is something that we have in the projects now by default. We've been shipping Entity framework for a while, but migrations is an awesome feature. So maybe you have some inspirations on the feature like in Ruby on Rails, but think of this. You actually create your database class, and you run your application, and then you decide, hey, I want to go add something else to my database class. So you go add a new member. Well, what migrations does is after you add that new member, you can actually go to the console inside of Visual Studio and say, create a migration, and it will actually write code in your application to move your application from the state where it was before to the state with a new method, the new member on your SQL object. So we're writing the code to upgrade your database to the new version. We also write the code to downgrade your database back to the old version, so you can actually move the migration to go up, you can move the migration to go back down, and we support the ability to actually publish applications with this as well. So if you publish your site to a remote site, we'll automatically upgrade the remote site's database as well. And then the final big feature in MVC 4 is Web API. This is a huge feature, and I think Damien and Marchin and Brad Wilson from our team are going to have a talk later today and drill more into some of these scenarios. But Web API, at a high level, what we think about is, you know, think about websites today. If you look at the Twitters and the Facebooks of the world, What are they? They're basically applications built with a public API, and then people can take these public APIs and build applications that plug into Facebook, build applications that plug into Twitter, build applications for mobile devices that use these things. We think that's the one of the future ways that people are going to develop websites is using APIs. And so we want to make rich APIs available to our customers. Another scenario where you might want to use rich APIs is if you're building what we would call a single page application. If you go to like a Gmail, a Twitter, or a Facebook, these are web applications that don't appear to be actual traditional applications. You don't click around. They feel like a desktop application. And that's because there's JavaScript running on the client side that's basically calling these APIs on the back end to do that. And so what we did is we took the best of MVC and the best of WCF Web API, which was a prototype from last year, and merged them together to give you a clean, consistent interface. So that's kind of a quick roundup of what we've done. And now what I want to talk about is the next version. So first off, we love feedback from our customers. When we used to have a slide when we were showing .NET 4.5 and Visual Studio 2012 early, about a year ago, and we were showing how do we come up with the features that we came up with. We had this site called User Voice, aspnet.uservoice.com. You can go there, and if there's something you think should be in our product, go add it to the site, and then you can vote it up, and other people on the site can vote it up. The product team tries to do a pretty good job of actually looking at that stuff on a regular basis and closing things we've done, sending feedback. But it's a great place to influence the product, and I highly recommend you go there. The next thing is, in March of this year, we actually open sourced a big chunk of our web stack. So we took MVC, Web API, Web Pages with Razor syntax, and we open sourced those. And you can see that at aspnetwebstack.toplex.com. On that site, what you'll find moving forward will always have the roadmaps for those products on that website. You can go to that website and actually file a bug or file a request to actually get what you want added to that roadmap. That's one of the ways you can contribute. Just because it's open source doesn't mean you have to contribute code. You're welcome to contribute your ideas as well. And so please go there and give us feedback. And so what I'm going to do next is I've got a slide with a ton of stuff. And I'm basically going to have somebody from the team come up and talk to each of these areas. This list is not a definitive list of what we're doing. This is just kind of as the year goes by and we're working on 4.5 and VS 2012 and we're kind of talking about ideas. This is just kind of a list of some of the ideas that kind of come up as part of that. And sometimes as we're in the process, we build prototypes and we'll demo them at conferences and that's how we get in the product. So the first thing I want to talk about is web forms. And one of the things that even driven me nuts for the years is we added scaffolding to MVC a couple versions ago. And what scaffolding does is it's basically a way of saying, hey, I want to start an application, and I'd love to have you guys build like a skeleton to get me started, just so I can prototype and start moving. And so what our scaffolding support does is basically if you have data objects, you have some kind of database in your project, we can then go build you all the CRUD pages automatically. So MVC does this for Entity Framework. We would do the same thing in web forms, and so the plan is to offer this rich scaffolding system. Even though I have the scaffolding feature listed under web forms, I think we want to move it higher than web forms. We want to make it be a generic ASP.NET feature. So we could scaffold web API, we could scaffold web forms, we could scaffold MVC. So imagine this being scaffolding vNext that targets everything. Something else that we've talked about is if you've used MVC, it's got this notion of routing built into it. So all the when you go to an MVC application by default, you don't have a .aspx. You have these clean URLs. Web pages had something built in very similar to that. Web forms, comically enough, fully supports routing and has since .NET 4, but it's kind of a pain to set up. You end up almost having to write a route per page if you actually want to get rid of the extensions and all this kind of stuff. And so we were asking ourselves, how can we make routing easier for you to use? And so I'm going to have Damien come up, and he's going to show the dynamic routing, and he's going to talk about the data binding extensions as well. So I've got Damien here with me now, and he's going to show us dynamic routing, and he's going to talk about the data binding extensions that we have, probably coming in a prototype for vNext.
Great. Thanks, Scott. So I want to very quickly talk about a feature that we've been prototyping literally in the last 2 weeks. So this is as a daily build as you're going to get. We don't even have CI set up for this yet. This is literally just running off my machine right here. So this has gone through a number of names. Scott just called it dynamic routing. We're calling it friendly URLs here. The name Smarty Routes has been around for a few years as well. But basically the idea is in web forms, we want to have nice clean URLs without a lot of work on the application developer's part. And so let me run this page up. At the moment, I've got foo.aspx, which is what you'd expect. But what I really want to be able to do is get rid of the aspx on the end of there and have this app still work. And as you can see in this case, that's exactly what's happening. So now I'm going to slash foo. I actually have a physical foo.aspx page in my application, and you can see that I'm getting that page come up here right now. I can add extra bits to the end of this URL. Let's put a bar baz on the end, and you'll note that I'm echoing out what the extra segments on the URL are after we were able to resolve to a physical file on disk via that foo token at the beginning. So if I go back to the page, you can see that here it is, foo.aspx. And down here I'm saying for each segment in request.getFriendlyURLSegment. So that's everything after the part of the URL that we were able to resolve successfully to a physical file on disk. And then I'm just listing those out. So you can see how you might be able to use those to pass extra information into the browser. I'm also using a static helper API down here, very similar to what you might see in web pages, where I'm saying friendlyURL.href. I'm saying build me a friendly URL based on this base path, in this case, tilde slash foo, and then add these extra values as segments to be put in after that URL. So if I go back to my page and we go zoom in down here to this URL here where it says click me, if I click that, you'll see it's gone to slash bar slash 34. And if I go back to my site, you'll see that that was because I passed in bar and 34. So really, really quick, easy way for you to get extensionless URLs for web forms into your application. So how does this actually come in? Well, over in my app start over here, in my site, I have a route config.
Can you say what app start is? We never have shipped an app start as part of our
So condition. You will notice in the new templates, the question, you know, I'm going to talk about what app start is. App start is just a convention that we're using to organize code in new projects that runs when the application starts up. Since 4.0, we've supported the ability for arbitrary methods to be called during the start phases of ASP.NET with the assembly pre-application start method, rather than you having to put all the code in global ASAX. The reason we do this is for composition. It means you can NuGet in extra functionality that has to run at start without you having to make changes necessarily to global ASAX. So in this case, in my global ASAX, I have the standard thing that we see in in MVC templates, which is in application start, we're calling out to routeconfig.registerRoutes and passing in the route table. So routeconfig.registerRoutes is a method in my application. So you can imagine this would be dropped in by the NuGet package. And it contains a friendly URL settings object. Now, this API is not at all locked. I know for a fact we're going to redesign this. This is a hacked together working prototype to show you how this feature might work. So I go ahead and I tell the system what extensions do I want it to look for when it's trying to match a URL to a file on disk. And then I can pass in another type that provides extra functionality in terms of suffixes. And then I go ahead and call routes.enableFriendlyURL. So there's an extension method that we hang off the route collection type, and I pass in that settings object. And that now gets this running in my application. The significance of this hanging off routes is that it's actually implemented as a base route. And so you can still have specific page routes, like Scott talked about, where in 4.0 we enabled you to do things like, say, routes. Get rid of that window. routes.map page route. And so you can put in a specific route pattern here, have that go to a very specific ASPX file, and all that will still work. And you can certainly put that generally before you enable friendly URL so that this route will get hit first. But for very simple scenarios where you just want to get rid of the .aspx on the end of the file name, this is a really, really good solution. So the other thing that we added was the ability to do mobile view switching. So Scott talked about this for MVC4, whereby, and our web pages too, whereby you can have a URL automatically load a different page based on whether the current user is using a mobile device or a standard device. So if I go back to my application page here, you'll see that the page says not mobile. And so if we go back to my solution, I go back to foo.aspx, we can see that the heading not mobile is there. But you might also notice that up here, I have a foo.mobile.aspx. And you can probably imagine what's going to happen. What we want is for the mobile.aspx version to be shown if the user is using a mobile page. In this case, the page is basically identical, except that we've added a meta viewport so that the mobile device will size the page correctly. And we've changed the heading to say mobile. I just so happen to have a mobile browser here. I'm using the Opera Mobile Simulator. So I'm going to grab this URL, switch back over to Opera Mobile, paste that in, and you'll see that I'm actually looking at the mobile version of this page now. So foo.aspx versus foo.mobile.aspx, but the URLs are identical for both users. Mobile version, non-mobile version. You'll also note that down the bottom, we have a very similar experience to, again, what Scott alluded to in MVC4 with this extension package we have, which is the mobile view switcher. So even though I'm on a mobile page, I can say, you know, I need to switch to the desktop a site for some particular operation. So I'm going to hit switch to desktop. And now you can see that I'm rendering using the desktop view because that's set a cookie which has overridden this mobile view switching operation. So now I can zoom into here and say I want to go back to mobile. And now I'm back at the mobile page. So these artifacts will be brought in by NuGet. This is something that we're looking at releasing completely out of band from .NET and web forms in general. So you'll be able to NuGet this into an existing web forms application and have that run. So one extra thing here is we've added support for model binding these extra values, these segments on the URL, directly into a page. So here I have a customers.aspx. So this is ASP.NET 4.5 now. I'm going to change my startup application to this, set that to my start page. And what I've got here is a details view. You can see I've set the select method to get customer. So if I go into my code behind, here's my database. It's just a static dictionary that I have in the code behind. And you can see I have a get customer method, which is going to be used to render this information to the client. So now if I run this page up, you can see customers.aspx runs. Let's get rid of the .aspx. So I've got customers. You can see it says customer could not be found because I haven't passed in an ID via the URL. Try something like customers/1. So if I click that, let's go up and have a look at the URL. So I've gone customers/1, and indeed, I've got one here. And I can also go customers/2, and I get the second customer that was in my database. To go back, show you the code again, all I have is my getCustomer method, which takes the ID as a nullable int, and then I'm telling the model binding system by way of this attribute to say, get this value from the friendly URL segment. And I want to get to it from the first friendly URL segment, which is the significance of that 0, because the friendly URL segments is literally an array or an I list of segments that came through. Now, of course, you could still use carefully constructed routes to do this with route tokens. But if you want a general purpose, easier to set up solution, this is something that might be of use to you. So the other thing that Scott alluded to was something we're calling data binding extensions. So I showed in my demo previously about async data binding earlier this morning. Wouldn't it be great if I could actually have my get customer method do asynchronous work and then have a customer return when that finished? So what I really want to be able to do is make customer return a task of customer. So something like this, and then have the model binding system recognize that I'm actually using a task returning async method, and then do all the appropriate work under the covers so that the model binding take place at the right time and my data binding and my page takes place at the right time. So while we didn't ship this support in the framework in 4.5, we've already got working prototypes of this for an out-of-band release so that you'd be able to NuGet in a data binding extensions package for web forms. And one of the things we're looking to support is asynchronous model binding, so you can get the benefits of async in model binding. So yeah. With that.
So you know, once again, I want to point out that what this kind of does is all the, you know, you're going to hear us start using this term one ASP.NET. And all the stuff that Damien showed you is, you know, these are all things that you could do in MVC, but right. Now you can do them in web forms.
Right.
And so, you know, I think you're going to continue to see our model being there isn't MVC developer, web form developer, web pages developer. There's just ASP.NET developers, and all of our features work seamlessly across all these technologies, and we provide you a similar experience across the board.
Absolutely.
So, with that said, I'll let Damien jump off the stage, and you leave your laptop here for a second
Okay. Before
we switch off, and I'm just going to talk about the next thing we're going to talk about, which is MVC 4.5, or MVC vNext after we ship 4.0. We don't know what the next version will actually be called yet, but I can talk about some of the things that we think we might want to do. So when we released Azure, the new Azure portal about a month ago, one of the things that's in the Azure SDK 1.7 is this awesome support for caching. So when you actually go and publish an Azure roll-up to Azure, you can basically tell it to actually inject a caching system into your site. And this is pretty cool. You can actually say, I want 20% of my actual instance to be part of a cache. And then if I spin up three instances, it's 20% of all three instances, and it rings them all together. So we've got all this great support for caching. If you're using MVC, some of this caching can be difficult to use from some standpoint. So think of our default MVC template. You have a template where you log in and it's got your name somewhere on the page. Well, if I'm going to use caching in my MVC application, I don't want to cache your name, because I would log in as myself and then Damien would hit the page and he would see my name and not his name. And so we're looking at adding a feature called donut caching to MVC, where you can basically declare areas of the page that we don't cache. Something else, we have a library inside of .NET called MEF. It's an extensibility framework inside of inside of .NET. And one of the features that you can do with MEF is provide dependency injection. Dependency injection is a great way to dynamically at runtime swap out code in your application. And you might want to use this if you're doing testing. And so when we shipped MVC, I forget, 1 or 2, we added unit testing support to MVC by default. Well, what we'd like to do in vNext is look at adding dependency injection by default. So it might be a checkbox in your templates, just like we have for unit testing today. We showed a little bit of the mobile support. Damien showed it in web forms. As I said, we have templates inside of MVC. We're looking at going above and beyond that, so we're going to do more work in the mobile area. And then something else is, as part of that scaffolding that we're going to do for web forms and everything else, we'd like to also go back and look at not only scaffolding static pages, but scaffolding dynamic pages as well. So we would write all the AJAX calls for you, so when you actually go to a page, you get that single page application experience where you just click stuff and the URL would still change, but the page wouldn't refresh, the entire page wouldn't reload. So those are some things that we're thinking about for MVC vNext. What I'm talking about next is Web API. And I'm going to go through a couple of bullets here, and then I'm going to have Dan Roth from the team come up and demo some of this stuff. So we haven't even shipped Web API yet, but we're going to ship version 1 really soon as part of MVC 4. We couldn't do all the things that we wanted to do in Web API version 1. We just didn't have time. And so we've got a list of things we want to do. One is OData support. So if you've used our beta or RC versions of Visual Studio 2012, they came with Web API that had some minimal OData support. When you see our RTM product, you'll find that we actually pulled the minimal OData support out, because we were kind of in a weird place where we had some support for OData in, but we were going to require a third-party library to fully enable OData. So we decided just to take it out completely and fully just have a third-party library that the OData team builds that provides great OData support for Web API. And when I think of OData, what it does for you, a customer, is when somebody goes to some API, they might want to be able to request, hey, I'm looking at a list of customers, and I want the second page of customers. So I want to say, skip the first 5, give me 10, and sort by last name. And OData allows you to specify that kind of query to Web API. The next thing is, if you're building an API, how do you secure it? We show this great support where you can log into an ASP.NET application, and that's great for logging in, but how do you make somebody log in so they can actually call an API? And there's a variety of techniques for that. There's things like OAuth, and we're looking at building rich support for all those things as part of some kind of out-of-band NuGet package as well that you can inject into your project and get great security. Something else is, if you're building an API, how do you find out what it looks like? Imagine we could have a page that actually showed you the APIs that were in your site and showed you what parameters they took. We could take it a step further and have a test client where you can actually select an API, select some parameters, put in some values, and press a button, and we'll actually show you the data that comes back, and you can actually validate if things are working right. And then finally, when you're looking at web APIs, you look at cross-domain support, so you can jump across domains. So I'm going to have Dan come up, and he's going to show our OData support that we're working on in the future. So we'll be back in just 1 second. So I want to introduce Dan Roth on our team, and he's going to show OData for Web API.
That's right. OData is a fantastic protocol for enabling rich queryability and to take advantage of a rich ecosystem of client frameworks that can consume OData endpoints. We want to participate in that world with Web API. Now, traditionally, this is a space that you would think of using WCF data services, and that still continues to be a great solution when you want to put an OData endpoint on top of a database where you already have a rich query engine sitting underneath you. But sometimes you don't have that that feature sitting underneath you. Like maybe you have a data source that's we've talked to customers that have libraries of native code, or it's another web service that they're calling into. It's a custom data source that doesn't support full queryability. You can do those scenarios with WCF data services, but you end up having to implement the data provider abstractions, which honestly are pretty difficult to implement. So with Web API OData support, one of the things we want to enable is support for custom data services. Also, you may have a data source that does not have full queryability, and maybe you want to actually limit the amount of OData query that you're going to expose to your consumers. With Web API, we want to make sure that you can enable as much query as you want. And lastly, with OData endpoints, often you want to inject custom business logic into the service. That's possible with WCF data services using their interceptor model, but you don't often have the full context that you want. With Web API, we want to make it really easy to do custom business logic that has full access to the context of the request. So what I'm going to do now is show you some really early work on the OData work that we're doing for Web API. Like Scott mentioned previously, we had some minimal OData support in Web API up through our release candidate. It was just simple query support. We supported top, skip, order by, and filter. We've pulled that out of for the final release. We did that for a couple of reasons. One, it was very partial, it was very incomplete. We wanted to make sure we had a full story. Also, we've been working very closely with the OData team. It's been a great partnership, and they are working on providing a full OData query parser. They recently actually shipped a preview of the parsing logic publicly in the OData lib contrib package. And we're going to be using that, and so we're working with them on that. And that's not going to be ready by the time we ship Web API RTM, so we wanted to wait to have the full story all together. So we will be previewing comparable support plus some new stuff, which I'll show you, of the Web API OData support when Web API RTMs, when it ships. And you can start playing with that, and then the final version of the OData support will ship later this year. So let me show you some examples of what Web API OData support might look like. Like I said, this is really early. This is my config file for this Web API, and this is a Web API that mirrors the OData endpoint that you will find if you go to like odata.org and look at their examples there. It has some very simple model types, a product, category and supplier, and there's an address for the supplier. All right. Now, to enable OData for this Web API, what I've done is first I've set up an OData media type formatter. Now, this is new. This is not something we had in Web API previously. This formatter is going to enable Atom feed and JSON OData formats for Web API, and it's both read and write. So you can post data to the Web API and also get data from the Web API using either of those formats. So a new OData media type formatter, which is pretty cool. I'm configuring it here. Notice I have to provide it an EDM model. OData is based off of an EDM model, so you need to create one of those. In this case, the way I'm doing it is using conventions. So you notice down here in this get EDM model using conventions method, I'm creating this OData convention model builder, which is very similar to the model builders that you'll find in like any framework code first, but this is specifically for your EDM that you want to expose as OData endpoints. And then I'm just telling it I want these three entity sets, and one for products, for categories, and suppliers. And then it's going to infer the rest of my EDM model for me based off of those types. Now, if you want to have really fine-grained control of your EDM model, you can do that. Here's another example of building the same EDM model, but actually manually going through each type and saying, I want this property, but not that property. If you want to build up the EDM model by convention and then go and tweak it, like just hide a property, you can do that because we give you full access to the OData EDM model builder. All right, so that's going to enable the format. Now let's look at the routes. Here are the routes for this Web API. Now here, remember, we wanted to enable just as much query and OData support as we want. Like, we don't necessarily want or may not even be able to allow you to navigate through any navigation properties. Oh. Let me make this a little bigger so you can see it. There. You may not be able to navigate through any navigation property support any query. So one of the ways we're doing that is you just expose as much routes as you want, as much of the URI space that you want to support. Now notice the first URIs that I'm enabling here are actually for metadata. So we're also enabling support for OData metadata with the Web API OData support. So we have dollar metadata and the server stock. For my other routes, you know, I got some resources with IDs. They have properties, being able to post links, and then the actual just full collections. So that's now we imagine that we can actually set up these routes for you by convention going forward. But for now, it's a manual process. Okay. Now, if we look at the controllers that actually implement these OData endpoints, they're pretty simple. Honestly, all I did was take the models and I scaffolded out a standard Web API controller. But there's a couple interesting tweaks here. Well, first of all, notice that your friendly queryable attribute is still there. We moved it out of the RTM, but it'll be in this out-of-band release, which will ship on NuGet. It supports the same query operators that you're familiar with, and we hope to add more, like support for dollar select and so forth. It's not on yet, but we hope to have it. Notice also that in the get operation for getting the products, we are able to model bind to this new type OData query options. And what this is going to have is the parsed query in raw form. So if you want to look at, say, the filter, and you only want to support a limited set of sets of filters, like I only want to do basically, you know, name equals blah, and that's it. You can look at the raw parsed queries and do some pattern matching logic to make sure that only those type of queries are actually going to make it through to your Web API. All right. Notice that we have a patch operation. OData has patch semantics. Patch means that I want to update the entity, not actually fully replace it. And to help enable that, we've introduced a new delta type, delta of T. This is going to capture just the changes for the product that come in on the wire. And then when you actually implement patch, you can call this convenient patch method on the delta type that will apply just those changes to the entity. So that's pretty cool. All right, let me go ahead and run this. So this is going to browse to my OData service, and you notice I'm right at the service dock. So here we have service dock support. I can browse to dollar metadata, which will give me a serialized representation of the EDM model in the OData supported syntax. And I've got some products over in here. Let's go ahead and query for some products, and heck, that's when we go ahead and add a top operator, so we just get the first two. There we go. So you notice I got two products. Here's one product, ASP.WebAPI, one product we all love, ASP.NET MVC. You know, we can just say I just want one of them. That would just give me WebAPI. Let's get three of them. Now all of a sudden at the bottom we've got web pages. So stuff that you're familiar with, but notice I'm getting the atom feed. There's the formatter in play. Now let's do something else. Let me go to, I've got a little client project here. This is just a console app. What I'm going to do, add service reference. One of the nice things about supporting that metadata format is now I can use some of the tooling that's already exists in Visual Studio to consume my web APIs. With web APIs that you don't have any metadata whatsoever, you're responsible for figuring out how to send the right data on the wire. With OData, you get some metadata, so we can actually generate some code for you. So I'm going to go to the same URI for the web API, go. Great, it's discovered my service. And if I look here, I see my entity sets are there, categories, products, suppliers. Let's do test as the namespace. Okay, and this is going to generate me a standard WCF data services client. And that allows me to then write code that looks something like this. You know, strongly typed. I new up the container with the URI. I can new up products. These product types were generated for me by add service reference, so that's pretty cool. All right, so this is just an early preview of what we're doing with OData with Web API. Like I said, we'll preview it the same time that Web API ships, so you won't have any loss of functionality in terms of the query support, but you also get more. You'll get the formatter, you'll get metadata, and you'll get expanded query support.
Yeah, so as Dan showed, OData, as I mentioned before, we have security and OAuth coming, we have help page test client coming, and support for cross-domain to support, so we've got a lot more in the pipe as well, just showing one thing. And you'll see us over the rest of the year, hopefully ship previews of all that stuff. So.
Yeah. Well, another thing I mentioned, for Win8, we will ship a Win8 compatible version of our Web API client library. So the formatting support that you get on the client support today, you'll be able to use that within Win8 apps. So that'll be pretty cool.
You should have showed the Metro Horse app, man.
We'll do that next time.
Anyways, I'm going to talk to two or three more bullet points real quick on my slide deck. I'm not going to switch because switching laptops is kind of painful. But one of the next things that we're looking at is if you played with the beta version of Visual Studio 2012, we shipped a template called Single Page Application. I mentioned this before when I first started talking about Web API,
And single page application is basically, you know, in my idea, it's if I go to Flickr, Twitter, Facebook, these are applications that feel like desktop applications. You click around and, you know, you're not getting a full page refresh. And that's something that we think is going to be more and more prevalent in the future. And so we want to, what you'll notice if you downloaded our beta, we actually had a template for that, but we pulled it out in the RC, and it's also out for the RTM as well. And we did that because we were looking at that project, and we're like, we want to do more, and we don't think it's actually baked enough for us to actually ship it as an RTM product. So we pulled it out, but I want to let everybody know it's not gone. We'll do something later this year and ship a preview of that work later this year and bring that back. Something else that we actually have talks for at the talk at the conference today and tomorrow is SignalR. So SignalR is this awesome library for what we call doing real-time web. And when I say the term real-time, if you're watching this talk and you're in the Jabber chat room talking to other people that are watching the conference, Jabber's written with SignalR. SignalR is a mechanism that allows you to do what we call real-time, which is, you know, it's a chat app, so things are happening in real-time. Imagine you go to Expedia.com today or some travel site, and you say, hey, I want to go book this kind of vacation, and it says looking for a trip or looking for matches, and then it brings back a result. That's an example of what real-time could be, is when you go make a request and something works in the background for a while, and then your screen refreshes and you see the results of that. Imagine if you're on any website that does like a stock ticker that's real or weather that's real. Lots of stuff is real-time today. So we have this great framework that we'll be shipping later this year as well as part of ASP.NET called SignalR that enables that, this scenario. There's talks this week as well, as I said. The next thing is we're looking at doing a refresh of Entity Framework. So when we ship our RTM this year of VS 2012 and .NET 4.5, we'll have Entity Framework 5 as part of that. We're already looking at what we can do with Entity Framework 6. And so some of the things that we're thinking about high level are async support. So you've seen an async talk earlier today where we showed all the great support in .NET 4.5 for async. We want to make Entity Framework work super well with that. So the kinds of things you want to make async are typically long-running operations like database or, you know, some kind of web request. So async is super important. If you're using Entity Framework code first, that's my favorite. I like to just write my all my stuff in code. Today, there's no support for calling stored procs from an EF code first model. So we have that as something that we're working on as well. We think about testability. You know, if you're building an app that's using a database, how do you easily mock out that database so you can actually write unit tests and stuff? And so we're going to do some work and see if we can do some testability kind of work. And then we're looking at ways to customize your code first experience. So being able to write some of your own code that replaces some of our default behavior in how we do things in code first. And then, as I mentioned before, we're looking at doing a dependency injection as part of MVC. We're also looking at adding dependency injection as part of Entity Framework as well. So I don't have any demos of that stuff, but that's all around the stuff we're looking at next as well. We've got two more demos today. The first one is what we call OneASP.NET. And let me explain kind of what that means. I alluded to it a little bit earlier. Today, if you're building an ASP.NET application, you feel like you have to make a lot of choices. So I go to Visual Studio, I bring up the File New Web Application dialog box, and I'm first hit with, do I want a web form application? Do I want a dynamic data application? Do I want an empty web application? Do I want an MVC application? If I select MVC application, well, then it asks me four more questions. Do you want a mobile application? Do you want an internet application? Do you want, it's too many choices. And actually Web API is part of that dialog box. And the thing that's bad about that is it feels like you have to make a choice. And then you feel if you make that choice, well, what if I chose to build an MVC application? Can I then use Web API? Or am I wrecked and I have to go and start my project over again? And so the idea of OneASP.NET is ASP.NET is a core base, and on top of that, we have a variety of technologies. We have Web API, we have Web Forms, we have MVC. All these technologies work together. So when Dan was showing the Web API support, he could have shown that from a Web Form application. Nothing ties Web API to MVC. And so the idea behind One ASP.NET is, let's throw all those templates away, or throw that dialog box away, and in the future, you will just create an ASP.NET application. You don't make a choice of MVC or Web Forms or Web API or SignalR or whatever else we've come up with in that time frame. You just choose, I want ASP.NET. And after you choose ASP.NET, what would happen is you would be presented with a dialog box saying, hey, here's a bunch of technologies. Check them, and we'll put them in your project. OAuth template support we've talked about for doing Facebook, Twitter, login. Check it. You get it. Then you run your application. You're like, oh, man, I decided I want to add a web API. What do I do? Well, you press a button. Dialog pops back up again, and you check web API. It puts web API in your project. Oh, I changed my mind again. I thought I wanted APIs, but I really don't. Bring the dialog box up again. Uncheck web API. It goes away. So the idea is, instead of having you make all these choices up front, what we'll do is we'll just have an empty ASP.NET application, bring up our dialog box, check the technologies that you want, move forward, and at any point, you can come back to that dialog box and turn things on or off as you want. We would even integrate this dialog box with NuGet. So, maybe in your environment, there's like 5 NuGet packages that you use all the time. Well, we can go figure that out and actually prompt you, hey, here's the 5 most recent NuGets you've used. They're sitting in that dialog box. So I'm going to bring Eric Porter up, and he's going to show a very rough prototype of what this looks like and show that you can actually run all of these different types of ASP.NET applications, or frameworks, at the same time. So we're going to pause for a moment, and then Eric will be up. So here's Eric Porter, and he's going to show a rough version of what we think this One ASP.NET experience could look like in the future. So take it over.
Yes. So by rough, he means we spent just a few days prototyping and sort of came up with something that could work. This is by no means any final version at all. Not even close. So I just want to show sort of the simple flow of how it might work. Let's just jump right in, and I'll say file new project. And here I'm going to pick you can imagine that there would be no other templates except this one. So I pick an empty ASP.NET project to start. And I come up with the dialog, which is basically a curated feed of things that we know work together well. Like, you can think of our templates as basically being pulled apart into pieces to help you start building your app and to make it more building block-like. So here in the beginning, I'm just going to check. I'll check web forms, and I'm going to check login sample as well. I'm going to say install, and really this is just a nice wrapper on top of NuGet. So it's going to go out and install all the right packages.
I love the Knight Rider kind of
progress. I'm not sure where that came from. It's pretty good. I'm going to hit close, and then I can just run my application. We've hard-coded it just a little bit to pick like OpenID by default. So you notice I get a site here, and I can say login, and I can say Google. This isn't styled at the moment. And I thought I had a different one. Yeah. Should do it. Okay, and it's going to say, hey, you're logging in with this one. Do you want to allow localhost? And I say yes. And I'll come over here, and it's come back and sort of defaulted in my email address. I can put whatever I want here. This is sort of associating my account. You actually find these features in the final version of both web pages, MVC, and web forms. So I'll just hit register here, and now I'm actually logged in on the site. So some other so this is just basically a checkbox, and I've gotten the feature. How that actually ends up, we're still figuring out. But now I'll show sort of being able to add our other frameworks in as well. So I'm just actually going to use NuGet here, just to show that there's nothing fancy. This is just a dialog on top of NuGet. So I'm going to use NuGet itself as it exists today. I'm going to say MVC. And this will install a sample. So we're trying to come up with ways that we can actually have them all work together with samples as well. So using the same database you'll see here, can compile.
So now you've got both web forms and MVC running in the same application.
In the same application. For the sample data, we actually just namespace it with a folder. So actually here I can do web forms. And this will allow me to create some data. I'll save it. And then I'll just come over to here to MVC. Same thing. I actually see the same data. So we're using EF for both of these. I'll say create new again. I can create some more data.
So contrary to people's beliefs, you actually can run MVC, web forms, web pages, all in the same application. And this just makes it easy. Instead of being stuck with that first choice and not knowing what to do next, now I can actually make a come back in at any point, add whatever technology I want to add.
Absolutely. And all these things can be done today. You can actually go in and make these work today. It's just not, we haven't brought it all together yet. And this is sort of bringing all of this together so that it's super, super easy to do all these things. I'll do the same thing with Web API while I'm here. Say API, that Web API sample. And I'll install it real quick here. And again, it's going to use the same database as before. So if I come back to my page, say API, actually, I forget what the URL was. One second. Yeah, it was. Ah, I do have to recompile. My bad. Yeah, actually, see, I get the data back that I've been pumping in through web forms and MVC. I can also add web pages. It'll do the same thing. They'll all work together with the same data. So these samples sort of all work together, and it just shows that our frameworks can all work together. And we'll go even further, like adding Razor item templates so that you can add, you know, whatever my app is already. If it's a web forms app or an MVC app, I can just add a new web page to it. And we'll remove the restrictions around how MVC project, you basically have to have a special GUID in your CS proj to get the MVC tooling. Working like Scott talked earlier about scaffolding and having it work across the board, and we'll sort of make it all one experience built together.
Yeah, I think it's going to be awesome. I mean, having all of our technologies available in any project, checkbox to select them, have all our features like scaffolding work across all the technologies. It really is. That's why we call it one ASP.NET, because it is one ASP.NET, all of our technologies together. I've got one more ASP.NET demo before we do a Visual Studio demo. Earlier when I was talking about, you know, we've added mobile support, Damien showed mobile support for web forms. I talked to mobile support for MVC and web pages. If you do build an app, I'll use the ESPN example because that's one that I use all the time, or one of the sites I go to all the time because I'm a sports freak. If I go to ESPN on my desktop browser, I get the desktop experience. If I go to m.espn.com on my mobile device, I get a mobile experience. We're building the technologies to let you create both of those experiences, but there's also a third experience there, which is I've got my smartphone, and my smartphone has an app for ESPN. So we've always had this notion of being able to log into your web pages. As Eric just showed, he was showing using a Google account to log into your web application. Well, if you can log into the desktop and mobile versions of your web application, what about if you have a mobile device? We want to be able to let you have that same login support for the mobile device if you're building an actual iOS, Windows Phone, or Android application that your customers are using on the website. So they use the same database, the same backing store, they can use the same account everywhere. And so we're looking at adding a NuGet package that you can add to any ASP.NET application. And what it will basically do is drop in a web API that exposes our membership system in a RESTful way. And then what we would do is we'll write small client libraries for iOS, Windows, Phone, and Android that lets you easily consume those on a smart device. So Howard from my team is going to come up, and he is going to show the RESTful endpoints. He's going to show it kind of raw. We don't have those mobile clients written today, but he's going to use Fiddler and actually show how you would actually call this thing manually and kind of give you an envision of what we're looking at. So we're going to pause, and we'll let Howard come up. So we're actually going to skip out of order. We were having trouble with Howard's laptop, and so we're going to jump to Mads really quick. And before we jump to Mads, I just want to talk about
So far we've talked about all the .NET stuff we're looking at doing next. We also obviously have a lot of new tooling stuff that we're looking at as well. So I've got a slide that I'm going to read off real quick, and then I'm going to let Mads do a couple demos. So as some of these demos we showed today of you know, consuming, you know, building web APIs, one of the things that you might want to do when you start using a web API is you might want to take the result of that, which is going to be JSON, and you might want to make like a C# object based on that. So Mads has got a really cool demo where you can actually take JSON and paste it into Visual Studio, and we'll create .NET objects on the fly for you. Something else that we're looking at is, if I'm going to call a web API, that's just a URL endpoint. What if when I write my JavaScript to call that endpoint, what if we can go out and actually query the endpoint and find out that it is a web API and actually give you IntelliSense for the API that you're actually going to try to talk to? So we're playing around with that kind of thing. I know we've heard requests for this for years, which is, can we support less in CoffeeScript inside of Visual Studio? So that's an area we're looking at. JavaScript templating, if you're using things like Mustache or Knockout, can we give you great IntelliSense and great formatting inside of our JavaScript editor for that as well? And then when we were talking about that one ASP.NET, I think there's more to one ASP.NET than just what we were talking about before, which is, what if you're Steve Sanderson and you want to build a great project template in Visual Studio that supports building SPA type of applications with Knockout.js? What if we enable you to build project templates that actually contain a series of NuGet packages, a series of Visual Studio extensions for formatting Knockout templating, and your own custom templates? So not only would we do one ASP.NET, but we would actually make one ASP.NET something that you can actually configure and extend, so people like our component vendors, people like Steve, can go enhance that. So I'm going to introduce Mads Christensen, and he's going to actually do a couple demos. He's got a full talk later today as well, where he's going to go into a lot more detail. So I'll let you have it.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, so we're a little bit time constrained, but I just want to give you a teaser on some of the cool stuff that we have coming down the line. So this is not in RC yet, but as you've heard earlier today, the whole notion of single-page applications, or SPA, as we call it, uses a lot of JavaScript templating. And there's a lot of frameworks out there right now. Some popular ones are Mustache, Handlebars, jQuery templates, and so on. But also Knockout, Backbone, and so on. But here, you'll see I have an example on what we can do with that in Visual Studio. So see, I get a very, very nice formatted here for all my different types of templating. Here's another one. You know, so these comes in all different kinds of flavors, and you will see us coming down the line enabling all of this for Knockout and Backbone and so on. So we will have a very, very strong single page application.
The point you're making is basically this formatting I'm seeing right here, right?
Yes.
So
sorry.
When I see here, I've got a loop basically going over my users.
Yep.
And then I'm pulling my names out, and you can see that Visual Studio is actually colorizing this correctly because it actually understands the formats.
Yes. That's right. Sorry. Yeah. I went a little too fast there. Yeah. Basically, so this is the handlebar. This is what handlebars looks like. And a lot of people are using this in different kinds of flavors. This is one of them. And I think that makes it much, much easier to actually do these single page applications going forward. The Twitters, the Flickers, the Facebooks, and so on. So you'll see a lot more coming from us here. Then let me just show you some of the latest we have here. So CoffeeScript. Right. We've been asked for years. When do we support CoffeeScript? Well, I have a working version of CoffeeScript right here.
What is CoffeeScript?
CoffeeScript is a pre-compiled language that compiles down to JavaScript. So it's it's kind of a different way to write JavaScript.
But kind of a macro language built on top of JavaScript that lets me...
That's one way of saying it. It cleans up JavaScript. For some people. Some people like it, and now we support it. We have the same thing for Less. So I have an example here. Less, we actually go a little bit above and beyond. So Less is something that's built on top of CSS. So it's actually a superset of CSS. Less is CSS plus some extra stuff. And some of the extra stuff is variables, like you see here.
So on my rounded corners, I can actually pass in a variable to that called radius.
You can, and let's try it.
With the default value, yep. It looks like a 5. And so by default, when I call rounded corners with no parameters, I'm going to get a radius of 5 everywhere.
But I could notice also how you get IntelliSense along the way as well. You can even pass in, I can just do this, and that's fine.
So it's almost like I'm writing a function. Now I'm actually calling a function, and it's executing on the fly as I use it.
And you see you get full IntelliSense. If I hover this, it will even tell me what the value of the variable is.
It went and found the pixel size up here and moved it down here.
Yes. So we're talking about a full-fledged less editor. And as you're going to see later today as well, you're going to see how the bundling and minification feature of ASP.NET 4.5 will allow preprocessors at runtime to handle Less and CoffeeScript. So you'll get a very, very nice story throughout this, both Less and CoffeeScript, and more to come down the line. But we're going to start with those two.
So to wrap up here, I just want to kind of, you know, we talked about what we did in .NET 4.5. We talked about what we did in Visual Studio 2012. Now what we have is we showed a variety of prototypes. We showed web forms using dynamic routing, showing data binding extensions. We talked about having rich scaffolding across all those things. We talked about MVC vNext supporting donut caching, dependency injection, better support for mobile, and more AJAX support for scaffolding. We talked about web API and how we could do OData support things like security and OAuth, having help pages and test clients. We talked about the fact we're going to let you build single-page applications. Mad showed you some of the Visual Studio extensions that allow you to actually do that with full tooling support in Visual Studio. We have a SignalR real-time framework coming up as well. We've got Entity Framework 6 with support for async, code-first stored proc support, dependency injection. We have this awesome one ASP.NET that lets you just create an ASP.NET project and choose and match the technologies you want on the fly. We didn't get to do a demo of it, but we also have support for thick mobile clients as well that can actually call into the same authentication APIs we have in ASP.NET. So that's just showing you that even though we have not shipped .NET 4.5 and VS 2012 yet, we've got a ton of stuff already in the pipe coming for vNext. And you'll see us start releasing prototypes and stuff as soon as we ship .NET 4.5 and Visual Studio 2010. So thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you.